Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a very different kind of program for you today. I think you'll like this. I have a woman on the phone who's going to join me here. Her name is Heather Landy, and she is editor-in-chief of American Banker Magazine. And I saw an article she had written about breaking up the big banks. And she is on the line. Heather, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. And so, first and foremost, I want to get a little background here. I know that you graduated from Northwestern University, and you have been in a lot of areas of the news, journalism, special correspondent for Washington Post. You covered a lot with large institutions, government. You've been in a lot of different areas, also worked at Bloomberg News. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you've got a very interesting background, but American Banker Magazine. I asked you before we started it, tell me about the association with the American Banker Association. You said separate completely. So give our listeners a little bit of background about your organization, and then we'll get into some of these rather big topics we wanted to talk about.
Sure. Right. No association with the American Bankers Association.
And you had the name first.
Right, exactly. The American Banker name dates back about 177 years at this point, and we're probably best known for our daily newspaper that's been around for forever, it seems, and we have a website and at AmericanBanker.com,
good.
And I edit our monthly magazine, American Banker Magazine, and we're owned by an independent business-to-business publishing company. So, right, no association with the ABA, although they absolutely are a good resource for us for information, and as industry spokespeople, we certainly talk to them, but we're not part of them.
Okay, very good, very good. So independent journalism, I like that.
Right. So
journalism's not dead, right?
No,
okay.
No,
despite
not
what
yet.
We hear in the news, you know, it's not dead. Okay.
Not dead. It's shifting, right?
Yeah.
The behaviors of readers are shifting, and the way that we are delivering ourselves to readers is shifting, but not dying.
All right. I like that. We're just shifting. We're evolving.
Right.
Okay. So let's do this. Let's get into, which is the big thing I wanted to talk to Heather about, and you had attended a recent debate about this subject, and it's the subject of the big banks, whether they need to be broken up, whether they are, quote-unquote, this whole too-big-to-fail thing. And so I think our listeners would really appreciate your insight because you were there to see this debate. Share with us, you know, what's the issue, what's the argument, what's kind of the for, what's the against, and what's happening? Because this is kind of happening right before our eyes, right?
Right. So this is a really interesting event. It was a debate held in New York City this fall, and they invited a for side and an against side to debate the issue of break up the big banks. On the for side, they had Dick Fisher, the president of the Dallas Fed, and Simon Johnson, formerly of the IMF and now a professor at MIT and a very active blogger and an author who has written many pieces about what he sees as the need to break up big banks and to remove a government safety net for the largest financial institutions. And these two men are two of the suavest, most well-spoken, charismatic people that the debate organizers could have found to argue the case of breaking up the big banks. On the against side, there were two lesser-known names, but definitely educated policy folks. The Clearinghouse is a trade group, a lobbying group for the largest banks in the country, and so Paul Saltzman with the Clearinghouse was arguing the against side, along with Doug Elliott, who is a former investment banker from J.P. Morgan and is now at the Brookings Institution, the think tank there, writing a lot on financial issues.
Okay, so they had some real heavyweights weighing in on this debate.
They did, and both sides took it very seriously. They both went through a lot of preparation. They each posted papers to the website of the organizers, which allowed people to research and watch this debate unfold online, as well as in person at the venue in New York. And I should mention that the debate was organized by Intelligence Squared, which is a really interesting outfit. They put on these debates as a series, and just for the purpose of furthering public discourse on a variety of issues. So topics are really varied. They might debate the value of veganism one night, and another night, what the U.S. should do about Syria. And on the particular night that I attended, of course, the topic was breaking up the big banks.
Well, I could use a little of my Intelligence Squared, so let me know when you find that formula, okay? I could use some of that. All right, so the debate was, do we break up the big banks? And you got to be an eyewitness to this. So let's give me kind of in a nutshell, maybe we can do one at a time, what was the basic thrust of the argument for breaking them up?
Right, so for breaking them up, the idea that big banks can sort of hold a government and its taxpayers hostage in a way if they need rescuing in a potential failure situation. The argument is that these banks get basically a subsidy informally from the government, and that this allows them to finance themselves at cheaper rates than other banks have access to, that they have this unlevel playing field with an advantage over smaller competitors. And the momentum, certainly, politically and in the broader, sort of voter population, has been with the side that would argue for breaking up the banks. And the Four team certainly used that momentum to their advantage and used their stage manner to really whip the crowd into a frenzy on several occasions with laughter, but also with some great remarks. Dick Fisher from the Dallas Fed talked about the acronym SIFI, which in bank world refers to systemically important financial institutions, which is what these large banks have been designated as by the Federal Reserve. And so there's certain rules and regulations that apply to SIFIs. And he drew some big laughs. He gave an alternative interpretation of what the acronym might mean. He said, "Save is failure impending."
Wow.
And that got a big laugh from folks. And he also even described it as a communicable disease, is what it sounds like, something that's transmitted by risky behavior indeed. So these guys had the crowd on their side for sure.
Well, Heather, I think a lot of people certainly can relate to that because, again, we feel like this in Washington sometimes, and it's certainly true when it comes to these. The too big to fail means that, the taxpayer has to step in. And that is an enormous risk to the system, that systemic risk. It has such a profound effect that is a reality. And I think that a lot of taxpayers, a lot of people, they're just tired of that. So there's certainly an argument there.
Well, yeah, and obviously our recent experience bears all of that out, 2008-2009. But as the against side argued, if you look back at maybe the last time we had a danger zone of that significance, that kind of significance for the financial system, it arguably was in the Great Depression. And in those days, there were plenty of bank failures to go around, plenty of need for the government to step in with all kinds of new safety nets. And there weren't really large banks at that point, not in the way that there are today with the concentration levels of deposits and market share that we see now. So even in the absence of some very large institutions, you can still have some very large problems in the financial system as a whole that can really put the whole country at risk. So that was one of the arguments of the against side.
Interesting. Well, I tell you what, it's going to be something that I'm sure will be debated for quite a while. Now, there's a whole other thing going on, which is one of the components of, if you correct me if I've got it wrong, Heather, but there's the Frank Dodd reform, and part of that is the Dodd-Frank Reform Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got it backwards.
That's okay.
And then you also have the Volcker Rule, which, that is aimed squarely at the big banks.
It absolutely is. And so it was very interesting timing for me to have attended this debate and then to see have these rules come out.
Well, let's do this. Let's grab a quick break and we'll come back. And I want to get your thoughts on the Volcker Rule and how that's going to play out. If you're just joining us, Heather Landy is my guest. She is editor-in-chief of American Banker magazine, AmericanBanker.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Welcome back. I left you with a nice big cliffhanger there. Heather Landy is with me, and I teed up the next thing I wanted to get to, Heather, and that is the Volcker Rule, and you're being editor-in-chief of American Banker magazine. I know that you are hearing a lot about this, and so is the rule, update us, is the rule final? Is it done, and is now just a matter of implementation?
It is. This has been a very long process. The rule was first announced or proposed back in July of 2010. Mm. And just now we're finally seeing the regulators. It took five different agencies that independently are monitoring banks in different ways and at different levels to come together and agree on a final rule. And it's for a ban, basically, to prohibit banks from what regulators and proponents of the Volcker Rule would say is from gambling with U.S. taxpayer dollars.
Well, that goes back to your previous comments about some of these bigger banks, and that not only do they have that advantage of that, in effect, that guarantee to be bailed out, that means that they can take some of these risks, perhaps knowing that, and that is if you can take risk without having to pay the repercussions, that obviously can let you take more risk than perhaps you would.
Yeah, it's an attractive offer.
I like that
right? Deal.
That sounds pretty good.
But, you know, big banks also serve special purposes in our financial ecosystem, and they do often need to take on big risks to deal with, for example, big clients.
Good point.
So they're taking on their own counterparty risk with large clients and want to sometimes hedge out that risk with, you know, their trading books. And so this Volcker Rule, one of the reasons that it took so long to hash out was that a lot of definitions needed to be cleared up so that it was clear where a bank could legitimately and legally hedge its own risks, and where they would be involved more in proprietary trading or prop trading, as it's known in the business, and really just sort of speculative trading for the bank's own gain, which is what the Volcker Rule ideally seeks to curtail. But there's absolutely still a lot of debate out there about the different roles that banks should or shouldn't be playing. And in fact, at that debate that we were talking about, that was one of the big arguments on the against side for breaking up the banks, that they bring a lot of services to a lot of large customers that small banks just couldn't fill the need.
They don't have the capacity, right?
Right, exactly. And I should mention, by the way, that debate, in the end, it was the for side that wound up, you know, keeping a majority of the audience. But when they polled the audience both before and after the debate itself, and the against side managed to move the needle much farther toward their side. And so they technically, by this debate organizer's rules, won the debate. So, you know, clearly what that says to me is that, you know, beyond being remarkable that people were really willing to listen and to have their opinions on this matter swayed, they haven't dug in their heels as much as, you know, some of the coverage of this issue might lead you to believe there is, but that they have. But, you know, there's still room for movement here as people decide what banks should and shouldn't be allowed to do.
Yeah, it sounds like there's room for some education.
Absolutely.
People to become much more knowledgeable. And, you know, for folks that are out there listening to this, Heather, they're not familiar with this. This is all about trying to protect the overall financial system from banks gambling by how they trade, using their money and potentially putting themselves at risk. And of course, then that puts the government, the taxpayer, potentially on the hook. And of course, the most glaring example of this is what has been referred to as the London Whale. And this was J.P. Morgan's now infamous $6.2 billion loss. Is that what they ended up finding out it was going to be in total?
Yeah, the number kept ballooning, but that's about the last figure that I've seen. You know, that's an interesting example. From what I understand, and I haven't independently confirmed this, but from what I understand and what I've read in the mass media, these were trades that actually did start out as a hedge on against things that J.P. Morgan had on its book, but that it grew and grew and went way beyond, you know, their need for a hedge or, you know, their legitimate need for a hedge and really became a bet, you know, a speculative trading bet. You could debate whether or not that $6 billion loss is really significant or not to the financial system.
Yeah, and here's what's interesting about it. Number one, you've got the fact that J.P. Morgan is of the size it is, that it was able to absorb that loss, and the taxpayers are not having to pay that. Okay,
right.
And then number two, that you know that they're making these trades, and with every time there is a, I won't say every time, but most every time when you have a trade like that, and they've lost that money, they've lost $6 billion on that trade or that investment. Somebody else has made that.
Exactly. You are literally the first person I have heard make that point when I've had this discussion with folks, and I'm so glad to hear that, because that's the thing. That money doesn't just evaporate and leave the system. It's just being dispersed to other parts of the system. And, these things don't happen in a vacuum. And
Maybe J.P. Morgan needs a better PR campaign. we actually donated $6 billion to help our fellow investors during a difficult time.
Our counterparties in the market. And that's absolutely a big part of it. But what Volcker really seeks to do, and it's named for Paul Volcker, the former Federal Reserve Chairman, who is best known for taming inflation back when it was that sort of runaway amount, but also has been a real champion of old-fashioned commercial banks, saying these are the banks where we want to have the government insure deposits, you know, the FDIC insurance that you get on your deposits, but that, you know, and he feels strongly that those kinds of banks should not then be allowed to go into the markets and essentially gamble and have a sort of casino side of the house when money is fungible and could wind up, you know, requiring a government bailout. So he was really seeking a clean separation. This rule that's in his name is not a clean separation. It doesn't provide for one. There was too much back and forth and too much compromising in the legislation and then in the regulatory hashing out. So it's not a clean break. The final rule was something like 71 pages long.
Did they get to read it before they signed it?
You would think. Paul Volcker himself, said that he hasn't read the final rule yet and wasn't really consulted too much as the final ideas were being hashed out. I think he probably had enough of it. It was very long and sometimes tedious debate.
Well, if you're just joining us, Heather Landy is our guest. She's editor-in-chief of American Banker magazine, and she certainly has her finger on the pulse of what's happening with these banks. And we're going to take another quick break, and we'll come back. Stay right there.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And welcome back. Heather Landy is our guest, editor-in-chief of American Banker magazine, AmericanBanker.com. And we're talking about the Volcker rule and also about big banks and to be or not to be broken up. But, you know, one thing that's interesting about the fact that, you know, that this, as you said before the break, Heather, that this ended up being, you know, negotiated and maybe sanitized or reduced somewhat from going far enough, perhaps, or moving the football, which is one of the terminology that a lot of politicians are using these days, and moving the football in the right direction down the field, that this is something that is an attempt to try to rein in. But there, as you said, there's still a lot of interpretation that has to be done, right?
There is. And I will say the final rule that the regulators came out with recently, I have to say, was stronger than I think most people were expecting.
Okay, that's good.
Stronger than I was expecting, stronger than what was initially proposed. What they initially proposed, though, was I think, far weaker than
Well, don't you have like five agencies involved with this?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's five federal agencies. They need to agree on these things.
Wow.
Right. There's a lot of, you know, red tape and meetings that have to happen, and a lot of confusing, you know, areas, gray areas in these markets. So market making.
Well, one thing, and I want to get into some of the different pieces. One thing I wanted to quickly point out, and you can clarify this for us, is that this rule, the Volcker rule, and again, trying to rein in or at least provide some guidelines, and certain things are not going to be permitted for banks in their trading. This rule doesn't apply, though, to community banks, does it?
Right. There were, for a lot of the rules that were incorporated in the Dodd-Frank Act, there were carve-outs for smaller community banks.
Okay.
So, right. But many of them, the kinds of things that we're seeing in the Volcker rule, most small banks weren't doing these things anyway.
Okay. Now, you started to get into some of the areas that this rule covers. You mentioned market making.
Right. So, market making, when, you know, banks trade, you know, equity stocks, for example, for clients. They like to keep an inventory of those shares so that when orders are put in, they can fill them quickly and not always have to reach into the markets.
So it's their own inventory.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And so that's acting like from a broker dealer world. That's the dealer part.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So, you know, when the regulators have largely agreed that market making is a good thing for market liquidity and just for the proper functioning of our markets, but in prescribing the language, the rules now, they specified that the inventory of a firm's trading desk would have to be designed to not exceed what they called, quote, the reasonably expected near-term demands of customers.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be really easy to define, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where those are the kinds of gray areas that we're going to have. You know, banks are going to have to figure out, well, what's reasonably expected and how do I express that? And then regulators are going to have to look at that data and say, well, are they fudging the numbers here or is that really what is to be reasonably expected? And, you know, those are the gray areas where I think, you know, we might see banks and regulators both get hung up.
Well, you know what's interesting? One of the things that I did think was a significant aspect of this, the Volcker rule, was the CEO certification.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. So now executives at the largest banks are going to be required to certify every year that their firms are in compliance with the regulation.
Do you know what the consequences are if they certify and they're not?
You know, I don't. I can't say that I do.
Okay. I'm just curious because maybe that's part of the implementation that they'll come up with the appropriate carrot and stick.
Yeah,
the stick needs to be really big,
right?
Because these are
right.
Big guys.
Yeah, I mean, luckily here the regulators have some experience with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act that we saw passed in the wake of the Enron and Tyco scandals. You know, where CFOs had to start certifying financial statements. So, you know, maybe there is some kind
of. If you lie to us, we're going to take away your private island.
Yeah, exactly. And your $6,000 shower curtains and all the rest, right?
Well, I think, you know, and we kid about it, but these are things that, you know, it's always a balancing act with anything like this. And, you know, you want to keep a free market and we still want most people, a lot of people, especially business people, want that capitalist aspect to what we do and trying to create the balance, right? I mean, that's a lot of what's going on here.
Absolutely. So the big banks would argue that, you know, the limitations being put on them are going to damage liquidity for the marketplace and their ability to lend. And if they have to, this is outside of Volcker, but part of Dodd-Frank, you know, and the Basel regulations, which is a whole other framework for regulation of banks internationally, you know, banks are going to be required to hold a lot more capital in reserve for different activities that they do, like lending. And so, you know, the banks would argue that this is going to put the squeeze on their ability to lend and do other activities. And, you know, some folks would argue, well, good, that's the idea.
We want to
scale back what you're doing. But there's still a need for credit in our economy. And that's just the way that business is are run, and that's the way houses are purchased. And, you know, it's on credit. And without that availability of credit, you know, it can really throw a wrench into economic growth.
Well, big stuff just cannot get done without that. And because if we go back to having to have the cash for everything,
right,
then you know what we'll end up with? We'll end up having fiefdoms again. You'll have the castle and everybody else around them. I mean, because that's the only way you could do it. I mean, it's like, it would almost be like trying to buy a car without being able to borrow the money. I mean, you just reduced the number of people that can actually buy a car from how many to such a small percentage. If that's the case, you don't have the volume to build cars. It falls apart for everybody.
Exactly. So once again, that keyword, as we said, is balance, and everybody's going to have a different perspective on, you know, on where the needle should be. The banks obviously have a different perspective on that than the regulators these days, and it's going to be really interesting in the next few years to watch how they hash these things out. You know, we'll probably see precedent being set in different regulatory orders that are handed down as a result of this. You know, there could be legal challenges stemming all of this. So there'll be a lot to look out for. You know, the big banks, many of them have already gotten rid of many of the types of businesses that Volcker was seeking to eliminate. So Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and all the rest have been selling off a lot of their proprietary.
Yeah, that's the funny part about this, Heather, is that, you know, regulators, it takes time for them to get where they need to be with the passage and the process and the five agencies and the agreeing to the language, that by the time they get there, the target has moved.
Yeah, and as that debate's happening, I mean, the bankers know which way the wind is blowing, so they can, they can, even if they don't have the final ruling, they can anticipate, you know, the directional winds and make adjustments that way. You know, even Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JPMorgan Chase, he recently said at a conference that, you know, he felt that Volcker was manageable for his firm, and that he was mostly just glad to have it settled now.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is when there's clarity, business can respond and can adapt. And that is a funny thing to have. I'm sure the regulators love hearing that. Yes, you're going to manage us. That's really what we want to hear. But you know what's interesting? You mentioned, you know, sensing the direction of the wind. Some of the direction, as I understand it, with the wind might blow offshore, because foreign entities aren't really directly impacted by this, are they?
Yeah. So this was an interesting area that the U.S. regulators really had to take into consideration. They were getting pressure from regulators and governments in places like France and Germany and Japan and other sort of global hotbeds of financial action. They were, with the initial proposal that the regulators put out, folks in these other countries felt that the U.S. is really going to be overstepping its jurisdiction, and said that, you know, these rules would harm liquidity and increase volatility at these foreign institutions. So there was a key phrase in there where regulators were talking about a proposed exemption for banks that operated solely outside the U.S.
There you go.
So, right. So that was the
key word, right?
Yeah, exactly. So in the final rule, the regulators agreed not to prohibit trading by the foreign banks so long as the trading and the related risks would be, you know, sort of residing outside the United States. So that, you know, I'm sure appeased some of these foreign entities a good bit. But, you know, there are still, obviously, if you're Deutsche Bank with a big office in New York or HSBC and, you know, operating here in the U.S., you know, there are still plenty of rules as part of this package that you're going to have to start following.
Well, we'll be paying attention, and Heather, we'll have to have you come back and give us an update on as this progresses. Heather Landy, our guest, editor-in-chief, American Banker Magazine, AmericanBanker.com. Heather, thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.